This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is At The Turn. It's time for discussion and interviews about the world of golf you won't hear anywhere else. Here are your hosts, Nick Heidelberger and Joe Simons.
Hello, hello. Welcome into another episode of At The Turn. Nick and Joe with you, getting ready to break down two of the biggest golf tournaments of the year, both happening this week. Of course, the United States Open, but also the Corner Club Open, Nick, is this week. How do you feel?
I can't wait to see who your dark horse pick for the Corner Club Open is.
Oh, well, spoiler, it's us. That's the dark horse for the Corner Club Open.
I think we're the pick to win. I think we're the odds on favorite.
The absolute worst place to be unless you're Scottie Scheffler, and Scottie, we are not. A reminder to please rate and review the podcast. Let us know who you think is going to win either the U.S. Open or the Corner Club Open in 2024. Give us 5 stars. Nick only wants you to review and rate us on Apple, but if you're so inclined, Spotify also is a major podcast service. I recommend you do that there as well. We are, of course, going
to
talk about...
Just to spite me. You could rate us on Spotify just to spite me.
If you're tired of Nick's antics, just give us 5 stars on Spotify. That'll really grind his gears.
That'll just piss me right off.
So we're obviously going to do a full U.S. Open breakdown. We're going to do our U.S. Open picks. We're going to do overrated, underrated, properly rated, which has been a fun bit for the majors. And we're also going to look at Pinehurst 1999, which was sort of the coming out party for this legendary facility, this course specifically, when Payne Stewart knocked off Phil Mickelson a few months before he tragically passed away really unexpectedly. Of course, you got the big statue in front of Pinehurst. That's the only thing I've done on the grounds at Pinehurst, Nick, is do the Payne Stewart pose next to the Payne Stewart statue, which I'm sure a lot of people are in that boat as well. But before we get to any of that, it is time for the Handicap Reports, brought to you by Blue Tees. Use promo code TURN at checkout for 10% off the best rangefinders in the game. Nick, I've done it. I'm back to an 8 handicap. By the skin of my teeth, I'm an 8.9 handicap on the strength of a solid weekend leading up to the Corner Club Open. I'm peaking at the right time, so all things are looking good for Simonson and Heidelberger.
Good for you. I'm really happy to hear that you're in your best form coming into the tournament. I thought that, so for those who don't know, there's a 7-stroke differential in your handicap between playing partners in the Corner Club Open, and this is the closest we've ever been, because Joe was like up over 10 and I was like 19, about to crack 18, and I thought I might just not need to have my cap adjusted for this tournament. But I'm glad you have made that a non-issue. I'm checking in at 19.3. I'm predicting it'll get a lot better from here. We're both playing our best golf in a while, so no matter what, it'll be a fun time.
The only people that can beat us are ourselves and the rest of the Silver Division. Those are the only two things that can stop us.
There's only about 27 people who could beat us.
That's the handicap.
We're going to compete against all of them.
That is the handicap report. Please use promo code TURN at checkout to get those great savings off a very nice rangefinder. Okay, Nick. Besides the 1996 U.S. Amateur, which was the third one Tiger won at Pumpkin Ridge, this is really the first tournament that I remember being really invested in. I remember vividly watching Sunday on my folks' couch. I'm talking about the 1999 U.S. Open. You had not only Phil and Payne Stewart, you had David Duvall in the mix, who was on an incredible heater at that point, challenging Tiger for number one, actually overtaking him when Tiger was going through a bit of a swing change. You had Vijay Singh in the mix. You had Tiger was in the mix down the stretch. Just a who's who of golf. And what's really interesting, and I rewatched the final round last summer. The last nine. They have it available on YouTube. You can watch the last the 2 hour broadcast. And what's so fun about it is it feels like it's closer to something that existed in 1960 than it is modern golf, even though you have so many people that are still sort of around the game. I know all those guys are at the end of their careers or on the Champions Tour, but there's still names that you know and you remember from the not too distant past. I mean, Tiger and Phil both won majors in the last 5 years. But when you're watching it, the club heads they're using, the distances they're hitting the golf ball. I mean, they're hitting four irons from like 190, which sounds normal to me.
It's but normal. Not, that's normal golf.
but not to a PGA professional. And the rough is thick. The course is difficult. It's rainy. It's wet. Payne Stewart has this rain jacket that he cut the sleeves off of, a la Bill Belichick. I still remember so vividly one of the storylines being Phil's got this beeper on, awaiting the birth of their first child. It was on Father's Day, as the U.S. Open Sunday finish traditionally is. And it's like, all right, well, if Bones gets Paige, then Phil's got to go. He's going to hop on a plane and leave the U.S. Open. And that was a huge storyline. You did a nice piece for this, Nick. What are some of your thoughts around Pinehurst in 99?
There's just so many different angles that all came together and to culminate in one epic, dramatic finish. I mean, the image in our minds is Payne Stewart in the fist pump, right? And that's like the lasting impression. But there are so many layers on layers on layers that go into this. Let's start with Payne Stewart.
Yeah.
1998 U.S. Open. Go back 1 year. He had the 54-hole lead by four or five strokes. Like, nobody hands you the U.S. Open trophy on Saturday, but he was in really, really good position to win it, and he did not get it done. You know, you can't really say he choked it away, but he ended up losing. He had a pretty big lead that he did not convert. And that weighs on you. And no matter what, like, that's a huge storyline. So now here he is in this position again. Can he get it done? Payne made a huge putt on 16 just to, you know, keep the momentum going and maintain, kind of hold Phil, you know, one stroke behind. And then you get to 18. The putt he made was like 15 feet. By today's standards, I looked it up, it's like a 25% make rate on the PGA Tour from today's standards from 15 feet. So back then, let's just say the odds are the same. There's still a 3 out of 4 chance he's going to miss this putt. And it was a no doubter. He walks it in. And that's just like, I think one of the undertold storylines is kind of redemption for Payne Stewart to kind of redeem himself from that, I don't want to call it a choke job, but from not converting that 4 or 5 stroke lead the year before.
Well, it's a really interesting time in all of the guys' careers that are trying to run him down. Because if you combine at that point, Tiger, Phil, and Vijay, they had two majors combined among the three of them at this time in 1999. Payne Stewart had two majors at this time. So Payne Stewart was as accomplished in major tournaments as the three guys running him down. Obviously, Tiger was very, very young at that point. Phil was early in his career, Vijay, you know, a little more in the prime of his career. But it's just such a fascinating time for all of these guys trying to track down the old warhorse who was able to fend them off and get it done. And again, I just can't recommend enough watching the last nine holes, just seeing how different everybody looked, seeing Tiger swing, seeing Vijay out there grinding away, doing his thing. David Duvall really faded down the stretch, but David Duvall led after the first two rounds of this tournament. He got in the mix early with a couple of birdies to get back to even and ended up finishing like 7 over. Again, the U.S. Open's going to U.S. Open, but there's just so much stuff going on in a 2 hour broadcast. And I would just really, I'm sure the Golf Channel is going to show it this week, like probably at least once, but I couldn't recommend it enough, especially because the other U.S. Opens at Pinehurst besides this, low-key have been terrible snoozers. 05, Michael Campbell won. Who's Michael Campbell? Exactly. In 2014, Martin Kaymer won by 8 shots. I went to that one. It was dusty. It was dirty. Martin Keimer was, again, he had a 7-shot lead on the 72nd hole. We're in the grandstands with about 15 other people that watched him win that tournament. So 99 sticks out for those reasons. I'm very curious what kind of tournament we get this year. Is it going to be something epic like in 99, or is it going to be another snooze fest?
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. Opens have been pretty good recently. The other part of this 99 at Pinehurst that we have the benefit now of hindsight is like, okay, Phil finished runner-up, okay? We now know Phil has 6 runner-up finishes in the U.S. Open, and it's the only major he's never won. Yeah. And this was like the best chance, in hindsight, like we all think about the one he hit it into a garbage can on the 18th tee and made double bogey. But like, this was a really good chance for him to win. All he needed was Payne's tour to 2-putt from 15 feet. And he had 18 holes to take down Payne the next day for a playoff. And it was almost like a miracle that he didn't get that chance. But then you also look at it and you say, okay, well, what ended up happening is his daughter was born the very next day, the Monday after, which would have been the day that there was an 18-hole playoff to win the U.S. Open. Now, I know there was the beeper, and I know Phil said, hey, if she's coming, I'm going. But that, it's one thing when it's you and 156 players. It might be a little different when it's you and one other player.
Especially
probably
when,
not. I mean, I will say probably not. Like, you got to go to your first child's birth. But well, the decision becomes a little more tough at that point.
Let me throw this out to you because you're a father with multiple kids. What if it's the second kid or the third kid? I'm not saying you, Nick Heidelberger. I'm saying Payne Stewart
gotta,
and other
you
people.
Gotta, you got to go.
So the birth of a child eclipses a chance to win a U.S. Open. I think that's right.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, imagine if – let's just play this out. Like, imagine he stays and then loses.
Yeah, he's in the playoff and he shoots 77, loses by 6. And he's going to go back.
He's just going off all day. All he can hear is the vibration on Bones' hip. And he's like, no, I'll get it later.
Anything else on Pinehurst in 1999, the U.S. Open? It's one of the most fun 2 hours you'll spend going in a time capsule. I'm pretty sure it was the last golf tournament where Dick Emberg was, like, I know this is broadcaster nerd shit, but I love it. But Dick Emberg is the voice of NBC Sports golf at that point. And he has the very famous call at the end. Payne Stewart is the 1999 U.S. Open champion. Oh, my. All that kind of stuff. It's great.
It's so good.
And Johnny Miller sounds like a baby, which is really funny, but he's still cantankerous and, you know, saying guys are choking their guts out and stuff like that. So anyway, it's fun because it feels like it's a long time ago. It is a long time ago, but you still have some names that are relevant in golf today, which is really exciting. Mm-hmm. Okay, Nick, let's get to it. U.S. Open edition. We've done this for the first two majors. We're doing it for this one. Overrated, underrated, properly rated. Let's start with the longest day in golf, Nick. Overrated, underrated, properly rated.
That's underrated, man. This is it's such a cool thing. I think I talked about it before. Is like you get just good club players who could have the chance to squeak through. You get former multiple major champions who don't have status, and you get elite amateurs like future pros like
Alex.
Well, no, I'm talking about like the college players who are sure, you know, have an amateur ranking or about to turn pro. You get all of them playing, and you know, golf is the unique sport where, you know, nothing matters except for the score you shoot that day. You know, it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter what you've done, it doesn't matter where you're going. Like if you perform when it's time to perform, you can get to the next step. So the longest day in golf, It will forever be underrated because I just don't see it ever really getting the proper hype. And I don't. So, yeah, it is. I love it. It's underrated.
I'm with you. I think it's really cool. I do think it is properly rated, though. The Golf Channel dedicates like 6 hours to it on the day it happens. And they have correspondents at the different places and they're talking to people who qualify. And they do a really good job covering it. I think at large, like the sports world, it's probably not covered like it should be because this is a very unique thing to golf in that, you know, a frequent podcast guest of ours tried to qualify for the U.S. Opens, and you can't really do that in the NFL, the NBA, or Major League Baseball in the same way. So I think it's properly rated, but I'm not trying to diminish it. I just think that it has gotten the proper due in the last 5 or 6 years where more golf people are talking about it to other golf people. But again, at large, I don't think there's a lot of coverage, to your point. Next one, even par winning a major, overrated, underrated, properly rated?
It's overrated.
Mm.
And it's overrated. It's fine if it just happens that way. The problem is the players are becoming better, so the people who are running these tournaments and are setting up the courses feel like they have to react by making it more difficult. And it's tough. It's tough because it's like, is it more difficult and they shouldn't complain that, you know, 8-under isn't winning and just go out there and play? Or is it just kind of like taking away from the product? From my perspective, I think it's kind of taking away from the product when you try to just make it so difficult to set like the winning score at a number before the tournament even happens. So that's overrated. And I'm kind of more talking to the USGA, the people involved in setting it up, more so than like our reaction as golf fans to even par winning.
Baby, this is so underrated. I love when these guys come off, they bitch about pin placements. Phil Mickelson is hitting balls still in motion. These guys grinding out 77s, just pissed off and angry. I think it's fantastic. I love when the US Open is around par or over par. Like last year, congrats to Wyndham Clark, but that was a golf tournament, right? That wasn't a US Open setup. That was completely different. Xander and Ricky are both shooting 62 in the first round. Give me a break. That's not the US Open. That's the PGA Championship of Valhalla. Give me a hard golf course. Someone shooting 2-3 under is the best round by a lot. I really enjoy when even par or plus scores win the US Open. I think that's exactly what it should be.
Do you like it when balls disappear in the rough, like a yard off the fairway?
Yeah, hit the fairway.
Okay.
I mean, that's part of it. I mean, you can make the same argument for the British Open, right? You get a bad bounce, you go into a bunker, you're buried on a lip, all that kind of stuff. Like, there is, of course, an element of randomness that you need luck to win a U.S. Open. But I just think, by and large, if you're hitting the ball straight in the fairway, you're not getting penalized, then you're probably going to shoot a better score than the guy who's hitting it 400 yards, but underneath a tree in 7-inch rough.
I agree on the principle that, like, yes, you should hit the ball where you're supposed to win. But, like, the British Open having pot bunkers everywhere is, to me, completely different than the USGA just narrowing the fairways and growing the rough to ridiculous lengths to where, like, if you don't hit the fairway, you're going to lose your ball or you're literally just hacking out sideways. Like, the British Open, yeah, you're in a pot bunker, you're hacking out sideways. But, like, you know where your ball is, and it just seems more fair and proper than just, like, manipulating a golf course beyond what it was designed to be just for the intent of squeezing a winning score out of the field.
So, ideally, what do you think a winning U.S. Open total should be?
Well, I think ideally you don't pick a number and work backwards from there. I think you set up the course to be challenging. Like, you can make it challenging, but I think a lot of times they overreact and I've seen where the rough is grown into the fairway, like how narrow the fairways are. The fairway bunkers are almost out of play because they're so far off of what now is the fairway. It's just like, it just seems so contrived that they're just trying to they're setting up the course to get a winning score rather than setting it up and letting the players go play and letting the score be what it may.
I do think you make a good point with the overreacting. If the scores are too low on day one, they like won't water the greens and they'll let it get baked out and crazy. That's happened at Shinnecock a couple of times. But I do like the concept of it being really hard. And I guess you're right. If the players are better and they're able to shoot 5, 6, 7 under on really, really hard golf courses, then so be it. I don't want it tricked up and contrived either. I just like the idea of par being rewarded. Like, that to me is part of the romance of the U.S. Open of, like, you know, when you hit a terrible tee shot 20 yards on a 400-yard par 4 and then you hit a 3-iron back in play and then you hit a 9-iron to 6 feet and you hit it in, it's like, oh, what a U.S. Open par from Nicky. Let's go. Like, that's sort of the idea, right? And I think that there's an understanding of what that means if you're a golfer, like what a U.S. Open par means. It does mean you're pitching out sideways and you're hitting onto the green. You have to make a long putt. I don't know. Maybe I'm just an old so-and-so, but I think that's fun. Your point is well taken, though. Contrived and overreacting, I don't really want that part of it. Do you want 5-inch rough in your U.S. Open, Nick? U.S. Open rough length, overrated, underrated, properly rated?
It's... I don't even know how to say this. Like, it's probably overrated, or maybe it's underrated. I guess it depends on your perspective. You know what I mean? It depends on your perspective. I think the USGA goes too far. I don't think it's overrated from like people doing. You see this every year. Like somebody will stand and they'll drop a ball in the rough, and then the ball just disappears and you can't find it. Like I think from that perspective, the rough has gone too far. I want to see thick rough. I want to see rough that is penal. Like you're not, if you're 150 in the rough, you're not hitting the green. Like I get that. I just don't want to see like balls lost that can't be found that were missed the fairway by 2 yards or rolled through the fairway into the rough. And then it's just gone. And you're completely like, to me, that is too much. So I don't know. Does that mean that it's overrated? Growing the rough incredibly high is overrated. I'll put it that way.
I like the idea. Again, I think this goes back to the last point of old man par being good. I like the rough. I do think it is properly rated because I do think that there's a standard. And again, we're not going to see this at Pinehurst because this is a different kind of U.S. Open, right? The course is more baked out. It's like it was in 2014. There's not a lot of high rough. So we're not going to see the traditional U.S. Open rough in this U.S. Open, meaning like it's 3 to 4 to 5 inches. Generally speaking, I like it, but Pinehurst is a different track, baby. It's going to be a little bit different. So I think generally speaking, it's properly rated. But I can understand both sides of it. If people think it's stupid, I get it. I just think it should be harder than a regular tour event. That's what it comes down to. And I think long rough contributes to that. Last one that I got, Nick, Pinehurst number 2, overrated, underrated, properly rated.
You're the one who's been there. So
yeah,
I'll let you, you know, own this one. I don't know. Pinehurst has always seemed a little bit forced to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably properly rated to overrated, honestly. I think number 2 is cool for an event like this. I don't think I would ever pay what it costs to play number 2. I've read so many articles where it's like, actually, what you want to do is you want to play 6 and 4 and then the short course, and you could play for like $200 less than 2 and still have this amazing day with all these different kind of shots. Like there's one course, I was looking it up, I think there's like a 4,000-yard course where basically you don't need driver at any point, and you just do all these weird tricked out shots, like really precision golf. And I think that's really fun. So the facility in itself is probably properly rated or slightly underrated. But number 2, I think generally speaking, is a little bit overrated. Again, we've only had one really good result in the 4 modern U.S. Opens that we've had there, and that was 25 years ago. So I think it will always come back. I think it's always going to be in the rotation just because of what happened in 1999. But I just don't know that it is a venue that like really draws out a great golf tournament.
Well, we're going to get a lot more chances. Pinehurst is now like one of the host sites of the U.S. Open. It's actually, I think the USGA just put a headquarters at Pinehurst. So like every like, you know, twice a decade, it's going to Pinehurst. I think they just booked the 2049 U.S. Open at Pinehurst. It's scheduled there for, I think, 2029, 2032, 2038, 24. There's like 6 more U.S. Open scheduled for Pinehurst.
So. 2040. Booking something for 2049. That's so goddamn stupid.
Like it's so golf, Joe.
I'm just so true. Okay, a quarter century from now, Nick, how old are we going to be in 25 years?
I don't know.
We're going to be in our 60s.
Maybe for our retirement, we'll go to the 2049 U.S. Open at Pinehurst.
I love it so much. Hey, did you sneak a Would You Rather in here?
I did, because I was thinking about this. And when I was thinking about the hindsight of Phil just barely missing out in a tournament that he probably thought for sure I'm going to a playoff, and how his career would have been different. So anyways, teeing it up this week, 25 years later, of course, and this is not the first time we've had Would You Rather, Phil or Tiger, but Would You Rather, who would you rather see win, Phil or Tiger?
It's so easy, isn't it?
No.
No!
It's not easy.
It's so Phil, I can't even believe it. It's got to be Phil. Phil winning a major at 50 and then 53 and completing the career Grand Slam. If Phil wins the U.S. Open this week, he might be one of the 7 best golfers ever at that point. Like, he's probably entering that conversation considering what the longevity of his career would mean. Being an amateur winning in the early 90s to win the U.S. Open at age 53 for Tiger? Yes, it would be incredible. The guy can barely walk. It'd be major number 16. Yeah, it would be really cool, but like, I don't think it changes anything for Tiger. For Phil, it would change so much. It really would.
It would change everything for Phil. It's so true. That's why I love this question, because like, I don't know. You can't not want to see Tiger win a major at this stage. I mean, like, it's so far-fetched. Like, I'm not saying either of these are going to happen. But then for Phil, like you said, it would mean so much. It would be so much more of a difference maker for his career. And just to complete that elusive career grand slam, to make up for those six runner-up finishes at such an improbable time. Yet, like you said, he won a major just a few years ago. Like, it's crazy, but it was also crazy when he won the PGA. So, I don't know. I think I want to see Tiger win.
I mean, I get that. You've never been the biggest Phil guy from my experience.
Sure, but I would love to see Phil. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I would love to see Phil win.
Well, I think we're not sure.
You think we can let this one go?
I think we can let it go. I mean, honestly, it's almost, would you rather, who's more likely to retire on Friday afternoon, Tiger or Phil? I mean, Tiger can barely walk. Phil has started to whisper about retirement after a very so-so live season and not playing the majors well. I would imagine Phil's going to play through his exemptions, right? The kind of the five-year exemption he got through the PGA. But, I mean, Phil can play the British, the PGA, the Masters, you know, for another 7 years or so. That's kind of the unofficial cap is 60 years old. So be interesting to see what he does. I don't know. I think Phil's being dramatic. I don't think he has any intent of retiring. I just think he likes to get attention. So we'll see. Nick, you got some news and notes here you want to go through.
Yeah. So just some things around the U.S. Open that I thought were interesting and noteworthy. How many championships do you think the USGA has staged?
A lot. I mean, I know the answer because I can see the piece of paper here, but
you can, you're on access to the
same. I'm cheating,
right?
Yeah.
Well, they've run 999, and the U.S. Open at Pinehurst in 2024 will be the 1,000th USGA championship, which is pretty cool. Also, probably no coincidence. Like, I'm sure they moved some things around to make sure those stars align. But
yeah,
cool nonetheless.
It is cool. It is cool. Good for the USGA. Fix your nine-hole handicap scoring.
Other than that, you're good.
I'm good.
We mentioned recently that Sergio Garcia did not qualify for the U.S. Open through final qualifying. He was, however, the first alternate. The USGA held six spots for people who did not have exemptions but could potentially earn them, and only two of those six did earn them. So they awarded the next four spots. One of them went to Sergio. Now, I think they could have – I don't think they just gave it to the first four alternates. I think they kind of chose – I'm not 100% sure on that. But he was the first alternate from the Dallas event, but he got in. USGA gave Sergio an exemption, which is one thing. It's in a completely other thing. It is his 25th consecutive U.S. Open, which is the longest active streak. So he didn't technically earn an exemption into it. To keep that streak alive, like USGA could have just said, like, hey, that was cool. But they gave him this exemption to keep that streak alive, and now he's the longest active 25 consecutive US Opens, the longest active streak.
Can I get like your 10 to 20 second take on Sergio? What do you think of Sergio, Nick?
I mean, just from a playing perspective, washed up for sure. His best days are behind him. I'm sure there's still some good golf in there, but not probably a good tournament. And then off the course, just kind of a jerk.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's right. Okay. And then we have some people who aren't going to get paid in the field.
Yeah. So 16 amateurs in the field this year. Low amateur at the U.S. Open is a highly coveted. It's a highly coveted medal. You do get a medal for that. Only once since 2012 did zero amateurs make the cut, which was 2021. So there's a pretty good chance of those 16 amateurs, at least a couple are going to make the cut.
All right. How many amateurs are going to make the cut? Let's predict. I say four.
I was going to say two.
Okay. I like that. Well, we're going to cut, take a break, come back, let you know who's going to win the U.S. Open.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Okay, we're back. Nick, you predicted, you went on a limb, you picked Scottie Scheffler with the Masters, and by hook or crook, he came through. We whiffed on the PGA big time. Neither of us had the cojones to pick Xander in a major, which I still stand by, even though he won one. So again, this year, we're gaming the system. We're picking four golfers, a winner, a contender, a dark horse, and then someone from the LIV Golf Tour. Nick, do you know who won the most recent LIV event?
It was the Cleeks.
It was the Cleeks. Cleeks GC. They did come through. Look at that. The Cleeks did. How the hell did you know that? You looked that up today?
I get the recaps emailed to me. So I saw the Cleeks won. I forget the individual champion, but this is the team sport. So it's the Cleeks.
That's true. This is not an individual sport in LIV Golf. Okay.
Wouldn't that be cool if, like, not cool? That's the complete wrong word. Wouldn't that be wild if, like, all the players on, like, the winning LIV teams got exemptions? Like, the Cleeks are now exempt into the U.S. Open.
I heard someone on the Golf Channel say, like, hey, can we just not overthink this? There's a lot of good players in the LIV Tour. Just have the top three points earners individually in that major. Like, I think that's a really easy way to do it. You don't have to do all this weird, like, ooh, is Taylor Gooch going to play, like, shit before every single major. Just
right. Like, people are going to play, like, the Asian Tour just to try to, like, bump up their world ranking by three. You know, it's
good. Let Joaquin even in the majors. He's one of the 10 best players in the world. Like, it's ridiculous. Okay. Nick, why don't you start with your dark horse?
My dark horse is Jason Day. And I know we haven't heard too much about him lately, but his game is definitely solid. And you know what I was looking for? I was looking for players who are good putters, because to win this tournament, you are going to have a few things. And one of them is the ability to make meaningful mid-range putts. Like, you're going to have to make some 8-footers for par. You have to roll in some 15-footers to kind of save yourself, to keep yourself in it. And I think that Jason Day can do that. So if the rest of his game is solid, he doesn't get too crazy, I think he can really be a contender.
Yeah, he's definitely been flirting with contending many times this season. I think he has a good FedEx Cup ranking. I wouldn't be surprised to see him contend in this tournament. I was very excited about my dark horse like 3 days ago because he was in contention at the Memorial. Then he proceeded to shit not only in his bed but in other beds as well. He went 77-80 over the weekend at Memorial. I don't care. I'm still picking him. He's number 14 in the world somehow. I know that OWGR is a little bit fraudulent at this point, but still, 14 is pretty good, even if you take all the live guys out. At 101, I'm picking the 2011 PGA champion. His best finish in the U.S. Open, Nick, a tee for fourth, a 2014 U.S. Open, which you know was played at Pinehurst number two. 101 is pretty crazy for the number 14 player in the world. Keegan Bradley is who I'm taking. He played well at the PGA, played well at Colonial. He's been in a heater lately. To me, this is just pure value. 101 is wrong.
Yeah, that's an insane number. Like you said, for a guy who's won a major and is 14th in the world, another major was a long time ago. Doesn't really matter. He's been playing really well. Should have been on the last Ryder Cup team. I think he's really, really motivated to be on the next one and put a big middle finger up to the people who are making those decisions and qualify on his own merit. Exactly. So I always look at these fields and think, who do I want to win? Which is kind of where that Tiger Phil would you rather came from. But mm-hmm. Keegan is a guy who I always like. I would like to see him win. I don't care how slow he is. I really don't.
I agree. I think that would be a really popular win, and I'd love to see his twitchy ass play with Scotty like in the final group on Sunday. I think that would be a lot of fun. Again, 101. That's just wrong. Do you want your live guy or contender now?
I'll go with my live guy. I think that's a good way. I got Brooks. Yep. He's won a couple of these things before. He doesn't really need to have any kind of form going into a major to win a major. And I just think that he has the demeanor. He's got the game. He's got the experience. It just seems like a safe pick. There are several live guys to choose from, to be honest, but Brooks is the one.
Yeah, I was surprised he didn't play better at the PGA Championship. He played okay. I think he finished top 30, but he was never really in contention after the first day. You're right. Brooks can just roll out of bed and win a U.S. Open because this is one of the four tournaments he gives a shit about. So very curious to see how he does. My live guy, America's sweetheart. I don't know when this happened, but it did. He's contended in both majors this season, had a decent season on live. Just feels like he's going to win another one. I don't know if it's this one, but it's Bryson DeChambeau. He's one of the short favorites. I got him at 20-1 a couple weeks ago, but God, he played so well in the PGA, played very well in the Masters, kind of faded on Sunday, but he had that insane hole out on Saturday at Augusta. Bryson's not scared at the moment. He's won a U.S. Open by like six shots before. I think Pinehurst is a really good venue for him because there isn't a lot of deep rough. Bryson's got a sneaky good short game. It just feels like he is peaking at the right time, played great in the majors. Bryson DeChambeau, 20-1.
I can't wait to see the fanfare around Bryson because like it's like nobody has changed his image more drastically or more often than Bryson. Like he came out, he was this goofy guy with the hat who played these one length clubs. Then he was like this buff guy who just smashed the ball. Then he was like the most hated guy in professional golf. Now all of a sudden he's the most loved guy in professional golf. Like, oh my God, what a roller coaster we've been on with him. But will he be like the sweetheart and then be under the cameras and the mics and start like screaming at children and just be like a complete dirtbag again? Or will he actually be likable? Will he perform well? Like I can't wait to see what will happen with Bryson. I've always enjoyed watching him just because you never know what's going to happen next. So I hope he's in contention so he's on my TV screen.
I mean, to me, he is the biggest star Liv has. I know that Jon Rahm is, you know, technically the best player, the most accomplished and allegedly in his prime, although his head is a total mess right now, and Brooks and Dustin Johnson and Phil, whatever. Bryson's the biggest star Liv has right now. He's the biggest name, the sexiest name, and you're right. People love him. I couldn't like explain why or how that happened, but I'm also in that camp. I wasn't a very big Bryson fan, even though I've always found him compelling in terms of rooting for him. But like in the PGA, I was like, let's go, Bryson. Let's get this done. Let's beat Xander. Get that country club kid out of here, even though he probably is too. Yeah, Bryson, 20-1. Let's see what happens.
My contender, I promised I wouldn't pick this guy to win, so I'm picking him as my contender, Scottie Scheffler. We can't have a U.S. Open preview without talking about Scottie Scheffler winning this tournament. It's like easily the most likely result that's going to happen. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what is going on with Scottie Scheffler. He just has this consistency in his game where, like, no matter what he does, it's still better than pretty much everybody else. And if he does that 4 days in a row, it's just going to be good enough to win. So it really takes a lot. Like, it really takes a lot for Scotty to not win or be like in the top three. Like even when he's not winning, it's not like hot or cold where he's either completely out or he's winning. He's like either winning or he's third. Like it's crazy. So yeah, Scotty Scheffler is going to win this thing.
He's won five out of his last eight starts, Nick, which is pretty, yeah, including the Players' Championship.
With a prison sentence in between.
Masters.
Between there.
Including being arrested. yeah, I mean, Scotty right now is at this recording. We're recording Monday afternoon. He's 3-1 to win the U.S. Open. So I've been trying to look.
Have you ever heard of paternity leave?
I've been trying to look at, like, all right, let's pair Scotty with, like, a Tommy Fleetwood top 20 to kind of get those odds to like 10-1 or 11-1. I'm almost looking for you can't bet on Scotty to win a tournament. You almost need like Scotty Scheffler insurance, right? So I'm trying to like throw a little bit of money on Scotty with something else to have it be a decent enough number to like cover my losses if he does win. I'm trying to like, basically the dealer is showing an ace right now and I'm being like, all right, so how does insurance work at blackjack again? what do I do here? That's where I'm at with Scotty Scheffler. Yeah. I mean, he's going to be in contention, like at a minimum, he's going to be in contention and he might win by four.
I'm sure you saw the video that surfaced with like during his arrest when the officers were like, oh, this guy's the number one in the world. And the other guy's like in golf. It's like, you're pretty good. And he's like, yeah, I'm pretty good.
Where do you guys think you are? You're outside of the venue for this golf tournament right now. Like, Jesus Christ. We have a redundancy here. My contender, I don't know if you remember this, Nick, but I put $20 on Colin Morikawa to finish top 10 in all four majors last season, which he didn't do. He looks like he's on track to do that this year. I got him at 20-1. I think he's going off at like 14-1 right now. Finished one shot behind Scotty Scheffler at the Memorial. He's been in the final group of the first two majors on Sunday. He's finished top 10 in both. Aside from finishing 16th at the RBC Heritage, he's been in the top 10 since the Masters every single tournament. He's won two major championships before. It would not be surprising at all if Colin Morikawa was in contention or won this golf tournament. He's a closer. It looks like his game is back. He's hitting his irons like a monster again.
Yeah, he's playing like Colin Morikawa. I mean, I didn't want to pick him just because I didn't want to have the redundancy. And I'm like, no, this is the guy who's going to win the tournament. Just look at it. It's the writing is on the wall. He has shown he has a superior game to everybody else. He lost it for a little bit. It's now back. Like you said, those two majors under his belt, he's not going to be scared of the moment. Going back to what I said earlier, a few things I look for winning this particular tournament. He's number one in driving accuracy on the PGA Tour. We all know that's important in the U.S. Open. Maybe not quite as much so at Pinehurst, as you pointed out, but it's still going to be important. It's still the U.S. Open. Also, when you do miss the greens, it's really tricky to get up and down, and that's where you win or lose the tournament. Can you save par when you're in trouble? He's in the top 10 around the greens. I love that. Like you said, he's got all the momentum. He's not going to be afraid. I would be surprised if Colin does not win this thing.
Yeah, I think it's a really good pick, and it'll be interesting to see if he continues that momentum. And like again, whenever I look at these, Nick, I always think like, all right, well, when I start paying attention to the tournament on Thursday, like what would I be unsurprised by? Colin Morikawa shoots 7-65 to open the tournament at Pinehurst. Like that would not be surprising at all. So the number one in driving accuracy, I didn't realize he was that accurate with his tee shots right now, but that coupled with his irons being good around the greens, yeah, he's my contender. My winner, Big Dick Vic. Let's go. So finally,
he stole that moniker from another OSU alum.
Yeah, I'll give it to the guy who's actually going to win a major in his career. Okay. Oh. Poor Ricky. Ricky's best finish is 18th. This season. 18th. Not good. And those are in small fields. Victor Hovland was the best player in the world for about 2 months last year. Towards the end of the season, he was playing better than Scotty Scheffler, and Scotty Scheffler was playing great. Victor was like, ah, you know what? I'm kind of bored in Norway. I'm going to switch swing coaches. And he played terrible for the first 4 months of the season. He went back to his old swing coach and almost won a major the next week. So Victor was in contention at the Memorial where he was defending last week. I just think Victor is going to win. I almost waited to pick him until the Open Championship as opposed to the U.S. Open, but I got too excited. I see him at 16-1. I just think that performance at the PGA Championship is going to buoy him, and I think if he gets a favorable draw, if he starts making putts, I wouldn't be surprised if Victor Hovland won the U.S. Open at all. He actually is my pick to win. That's my winner.
We got a lot of chalk on this board.
But, Nick, I think that's where we are right now. I mean, look at the first two major winners. It was Scottie Scheffler and Xander Schauffele, two of the five best players in the world. And, you know, I'm looking at this board. Besides Jason Day and Keegan Bradley are dark horses. You know, Brooks is kind of spotty, but he can win.
Who both of which have already won majors.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I would just be, I'd be surprised if we had a surprise. Like, I'd be shocked if like a Tommy Fleetwood won this tournament. I think it'd be fun, but it just feels like it's going to be someone from the top of the heap. It's that kind of season, I think, in the PGA Tour. So again, I got Vic Hovland, Colin Morikawa, Keegan Bradley, and Bryson DeChambeau. Nick has Colin Morikawa, Scottie Scheff, Jason Day, and Brooks Koepka. It is chalky, but boy, it feels like the winner's going to come from that pack, Nick.
I like it.
As long as Scotty is in there, I feel pretty good. With that, it is now time for the Mad Golfer of the Week. It is brought to you by Piper Golf. Use promo code TURN10 at checkout for incredible savings off incredible golf balls. We're going to Pinehurst. In fact, we're going to Pinehurst number 2. Marty Fluke is our Mad Golfer of the Week. Marty says, quote, "Unfortunately, our round today approached 6 hours, which made for an unpleasant experience. Green fee for two, $380 upcharge, $150 caddy fee, and $150 tip. $700 plus for an unpleasant journey makes for poor value."
Okay. This is a short review, but still a lot to unpack. Wouldn't you expect a 6-hour round at Pinehurst? I mean, just like pretty much that's kind of what you're signing up
Protocol.
For. Yeah. Green fee for two. Is the $380 upcharge the green fee? Is like a green fee an upcharge, or is there a green fee plus a $400 upcharge? I'm not really understanding that.
I'm confused by that too.
And then you're tipping 100% of the caddy fee? I don't really know. I've never had a caddy. Maybe that's standard. I know you're supposed to tip well, but 150 caddy fee plus 150, I don't know. But 700 all in all, $700 in 6 hours is exactly what I would expect to play Pinehurst number 2. So I don't know what you thought you were getting.
It's no fluke. Marty is our Mad Golfer of the Week. And with that, it is now time for Nick Rules, brought to you by Matchstick Golf. Use promo code TURN20 at checkout.
U.S. Open winner gets a bunch of stuff, Joe. I'm going to read you a list of all the things the U.S. Open winner gets. A U.S. Open exemption for the next 10 years.
Can we pause there?
Yes.
That's crazy. Lucas Glover was interviewed because he won the U.S. Open in 2009 at Bethpage Black, and someone asked him about like not being in majors anymore, and he's like, "I won the worst major to win." Because it's the only one without a lifetime exemption.
You should get a lifetime exemption.
I agree.
It's crazy. It is crazy. Because like it's kind of embarrassing for the USGA to have former U.S. Open champions going to the final qualifying.
Up until 50. Do something. If you're a U.S. Open champion still on the PGA Tour, you should get to play in the U.S. Open.
Yes, I agree. So that and the handicap thing. Other than that, USJ, you're doing a great job.
Great job.
An invitation to the next 5 Masters, invitation to the next 5 Open and PGA, the next 5 Players Championships, exempt status on the PGA Tour for 5 years, custody of the U.S. Open trophy for 1 year, and the Jack Nicklaus medal and a replica trophy. That is what you get for winning the U.S. Open, plus a big check if you're a professional.
What's the best thing on that list?
The thing that's not on the list, the check.
Something like $3-4 million.
Yeah, I think the invitation to the next 5 players is probably the most coveted thing that they're playing for.
I don't have to pay for my tee time to TPC Sawgrass. And that is Nick Rules. So, of course, we have the Corner Club Open this weekend. We pre-recorded one with Dane Delgado of Matchstick Golf. That is going to be airing next week. That was a lot of fun, a lot of cool stuff happening at Matchstick Golf. I complain about being burnt out. I drink a very tall glass of wine. I had a great time, Nick, didn't you?
It was great. I loved it.
So stay tuned for that. And then you know, the rest of the season is coming up. I'm going to Scotland in like a month. I'm trying to play the old course at St. Andrews. I'll be providing updates on that. Should be a wild time. Everyone, enjoy both the U.S. Open and the Corner Club Open.
I'm Lacey Evans. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time at The Turn.